Well, I would say my drinking became a problem the day I started drinking, because the first drink I had made me feel, you know, like this was the answer to all my problems. This is what I'd been searching for. And yet at the same time, you know, I remember looking around the place I was drinking in and seeing lots of, you know, older men and thinking, I wonder, do any of them know my dad or mum? So I was drinking with guilt from the very beginning, which, you know, and I realise was symptomatic of all that was to come. And certainly as time progressed, you know, that feeling of guilt persisted, no matter when I was drinking. So really, you know, my drinking was a problem from the beginning.
What age were you?
I was 17 at that particular time, and that night also, you know, the girl I was with, she didn't like the taste of it and didn't like the feel of it. So she only had a few sips out of the cider that she had, and I finished mine and then I finished hers, you know. So that's an indication of you know, what was to come.
And what did come?
Well, I mean, as time went on, once I started drinking, I couldn't stop, you know. I didn't know that there was anything wrong with it. I didn't recognise any of the physical things that, you know, I mean what I know now is craving and if you like an allergy, and the fact that once you begin you need more, you know, that was there from the very beginning. And so once I started drinking, once I had the first one, then I needed another one and another one and another one. And you know, it wasn't a question of I'll have a few drinks and stop. That was the intention. Every time, that was the intention. But that never ever was, you know, unless I was in a situation where, you know, I was with my, you know, and with my family, and maybe a one or two drinks was all that anyone would have had, and then we would have been leaving wherever we were. But, you know, the feeling of I need more, I wanted more, would have persisted until the actual drink I had worn off, and that feeling of discontent that I hadn't got enough. There was no real enjoyment. If I had a few nice drinks with the family and, you know, gone home content, I would have been looking to go on somewhere else or to get another drink somewhere else.
So that from early on, and you say you were drinking in a way that was, if you knew what you knew now, the warning signs were there. But you were 17, and what age were you when you got recovery?
When I eventually got recovery, I was 40. I spent my 40th birthday in the last treatment centre that I went into, and it was the last of many, really.
So in that intervening time, how come it took so long?
Well, you know, the denial system is there, and because I suppose we don't drink. The young people drink now a lot different from we did. The same money wasn't there, so you know, you weren't drinking every day or every night at the beginning. It was maybe once or twice a month, or you know, I was still at school. Then when I left school and went on to work, it was maybe once a week, twice a week. Always when I would have drunk, I would have, you know, it would have ended up I was drunk. But initially it wouldn't have been every night or every day. I was able to hold down jobs. I was able to function at some kind of level, you know, but looking back, that's what I was doing, functioning at some kind of level. My life was not fulfilling, you know, I wasn't progressing in the way that people normally do. I mean, I moved from one set of friends to the other because as people that I was, you know, friendly with, you know, got married or moved on or got promotion in their jobs, you know, I was kind of behind, and instead of looking at that and saying, well, you know, what's going on here, I would have moved on to the next bunch and called the previous ones fuddy duddies, and, you know, they're no crack anymore, and you know, instead of looking at myself, I would have looked at them, moved on just to another group of friends who would drink the same way as I did, you know. And so there was that kind of not putting down any real roots anywhere. I moved to Denmark at one time, which I now know again as part of the spiral of addiction, which is known as the geographical change, where you think, well, if I just get it away from here, and away from this environment that I'm in, and away from this country that I'm in, and the you know, the situation that I'm in, then things will be different. And for a while it was. I mean, you know, for a while it was, because I was in a different situation, and I was in a job that required me to be up very early in the morning, and you know, the drink was far more expensive in Denmark, so for a while. But every time I did go out when I was there, you know, I ended up getting really, really drunk. And when I came home, I remember coming home that Christmas and thinking, you know, I have this licked now, because I wasn't drinking so much when I was away there. And, you know, because I haven't been drinking as much as I would have, maybe whenever I come home now, I'll be able to have a few drinks and I'll be able to go to the parties and with the family, and I won't be drinking abnormally. And I mean, I was only 24 or 25 at this stage. And yet I went into the bar where all my friends were and ended up being sent home in a taxi.
So what then precipitated your realisation that you really, really had a problem and that you needed to get treatment? Tell me about that.
Well, I suppose my family were always, you know, talking about the way I drank, and that, you know, and had many days when I had to give my mother, you know, a box of chocolates because of coming and drunk the night before. But as time went on, you know, things got worse. I wasn't getting promotion and work. People were getting promoted over me. I got married. I had children, and then my marriage broke up, and then my drinking really, really took off, and I was drinking every day to kill the pain every night, and I couldn't even I couldn't see that my children needed me. You know, I was so engrossed and wrapped up in my own stuff that I was totally oblivious to what they were going through, and drinking to kill that pain, and totally unaware of how it was affecting them. You know,
what age were they?
My daughter was she was about 8 by the time it took off. She was 11 by the time I got sober. And my son was only just about a year. And he was nearly 4 whenever I got sober. So then I had a relationship while I was in and out of treatment centres, trying to get cleaned up. I passed my daughter in the street one night. And she walked to the other side of the street, and at this stage, you know, I was pregnant as a result of this relationship, and she didn't know that, and that was an awful shock to her. She also, you know, she wanted nothing to do with me. She was staying with my mother at this stage, and my son was with his father. And you know, I realised, oh God, I need to get out of this, you know. And I knew that God had some other plan for me. You know, I did know that, and I knew that someday I would get sober, but I just wasn't sure at that stage how.
And did you have a faith? I mean, did you pray? Did you feel guilty?
Of course, I felt guilty, and you know, one of my big guilty feelings was around my mother, who was, you know, elderly and not well, and hadn't really been well since my father died. And I used to say, "Please, God, you know, let me get well before she dies." You know, because I think I couldn't have borne that, you know, if I had been still drinking when she died, you know, that she wouldn't love to see me sober. And that was a big thing too.
So you went very far down then, if your children were with other people and wouldn't cross the street to say hello to you.
Yeah. I was down. I mean, I was in the gutter. I was in hell. And there was really nowhere else for me to go except really to hell or to come back up again, you know. And my third child was born, and the day that she was born is the day I stopped drinking. And I mean, I woke up to a case conference in the hospital and her being taken into care, and my own family not even willing to take her because they were so afraid that, you know, if they took her and took responsibility for her too, that it would just give me another license to go back out and go drinking again, that I needed to see, I needed to feel, you know. And it was difficult for them, but I needed to feel, you know, that loss, and just how it was, you know, if I was going to get well.
So you woke up in a hospital and your baby was taken off because you had been drinking so much, was that it?
Yeah, that's right. And she was in withdrawals herself when she was born. They had to sedate her because she went into alcohol withdrawals, and she was diagnosed with fetal alcohol syndrome as well. And there was all that, and even I remember lying kind of in a half stupor coming out of the anaesthetic, and I heard a nurse saying, they were talking about the baby, and they said, oh, why the wee alcoholic? And I remember thinking, you know, my God, this, you know, how did I get to this?
They meant the baby?
They were talking about the baby, yeah.
So that was a turning point for you, even though you had, you mentioned, been in other treatment centres before and they hadn't worked?
Yeah, they hadn't worked, or I hadn't been prepared to let them work, you know, whatever way you want to look at it. I wasn't ready. But that, you know, I don't know what happened. There was certainly there was some kind of a spiritual element to it where I, you know, it was as if something had lifted, something had shifted. I couldn't put my finger on it, but I knew it was there. And I knew, I didn't know what I was coming out to. I didn't know who was speaking to me, who wasn't. I knew the children were all gone. I felt as if I was totally alone, and yet I knew I wasn't alone. And I knew that, you know, I had to do it this time. And I had this vision of myself standing on a bridge. There's two bridges where I live, so I had my vision of myself standing on this bridge, totally alone, and yet there was a presence there. You know, saying, you know, it's going to be all right, you know, and you have to do this no matter what it takes. And that was that kind of got me in and through the doors of the last treatment centre and sustained me through it, because it was a very difficult time, particularly, you know, when my daughter came in. They have sort of family confrontations. It's the way that this treatment centre worked. And my daughter came in and she spoke for maybe an hour and a half about how my drinking had affected her and how she saw me, you know, and painting that picture, having to listen to that from her perspective. And, you know, one of the things that she said, she wanted to leave me, she hated me, she felt like taking her own life at times, you know, how she'd never trust me again, and everything that went along with it. And, you know, and when she finished, you know, I couldn't hardly lift my head for a look at anybody for about 4 days. But I knew with a certainty that was the end of it. I knew that no matter what happened, that you know, my guardian angel or somebody was going to be with me. That presence that I had felt was there, and I knew it was going to be all right. I didn't know how long it was going to take or what else was that I had to go, but I knew I had to do whatever it took to get sober and to win back their love and their trust. And I knew it would do it. I knew it would do it, and I knew the healing would be there.
Were you on a spiritual program, you know, like 12-step or?
Yeah, well, I mean, I had been in and out of AA during the time I was trying to sort of stop drinking before that. And I had that spiritual, the 12 steps, the 12-step spirituality, although at that particular time I didn't know as much about them as I know now. But it was a big part of my recovery. And, you know, once I finished in the treatment centre, AA was my lifeline. I went to the meetings and I learned about the steps, and I learned about the acceptance of doing things differently and accepting God in my life and allowing him to direct me. And you know, and looking back on it now particularly, and working with others that are in the same boat, you know, I can see that what I'm telling them to do now is exactly what I was doing. And I don't feel anybody had told me to do a lot of the stuff that I was doing. I was doing it maybe instinctively, I thought then, but I mean, when I look back, I know I was doing it because I was being directed by my higher power, by God as I understood him. And I was doing all the right things, even though I wasn't sure sometimes whether they were right or not. But I was doing them because I felt they were right. And clearly, those things I recognise. It's all the things that I'm telling everybody else to do now that are, you know, the addicts that I work with. and I was doing them. I was being directed. I know I was being directed by God.
So you got a treatment. You got out of denial, all those things, but you came out. You were on your own. Your three children were with other people. One in care, and two mm-hmm. with her family, your extended family. And you had no job,
mm-hmm.
and you were 40 years of age.
Mm-hmm.
How did you start rebuilding your life without drink, and starting all over again?
Well, the first few years, it was really just about experiencing sobriety and experiencing everything that I hadn't experienced before. It was incredibly uplifting how people around me seemed to see the difference and seemed to know that this time it was different because I had been in so many treatment centres. I thought that they'll not believe me or they'll not trust me. But it was strange how they did. And there was never any question of me going back drinking again. My mother, her health was declining, you know, and she had offered for me to stay with her for a week when I first came out. And in actual fact, I never left. I stayed with her until she died. My oldest daughter, she was living there at the time and didn't particularly want me there at the time. So it was a question of, you know, just getting on with it and doing the things and hoping that, you know, eventually she would accept me. And you know, and that was a long, hard struggle because it took her a long, long time. Everybody else, for the most part, accepted that I was, you know, but this time it was different. And for the, you know, and it was different. And then the first couple of years, that's all I did, you know.
So your mummy lived to see you sober and you looked after her till she died?
That's right, I did. And that was a great blessing as well, you know, knowing that. And she died happy that I was sober. So when she died, then I thought, well, what's next now? You know, it was like, all right, you've had your rest. What now? And it was difficult at times because I used to even look at people that were working in supermarket checkouts and envy them because they were working and they had that camaraderie and that banter that goes along with work and life. And I didn't have that anymore. And because I had to change the friends that I had, I felt very isolated at times. But I just began doing courses, you know, started off doing a GCSE in psychology, then a certificate in counselling, and then went on to do the diploma. And, you know, one thing led to another. And then this letter arrived in one day from a group that were opening a treatment centre near where I lived, offering me the chance of doing the Hazelton course and becoming an addiction counsellor. And, you know, I put the letter away and I had to keep going back and opening it and reading it and pinching myself and thinking, you know, this is not real. How can this, you know, what, only 5 or 6 years later and you know, and what I really, really wanted is coming the door to me, you know. And I just kept saying, well, this is God. This has to be God because, you know, I was doing what I thought was right, but and hoping that the right thing would come, that I would get my direction from it, and you know, and it did, and you know, and that was the beginning of a whole new career for me, you know. I did.
Had you your children back at this stage?
Oh yes, I had the children back at this stage. The older girl was, you know, nearly finished her grammar school education. My son was going from primary into secondary, and my youngest child she's in a special school but doing very well, and we were all together. I mean, that was the main thing, we were all together. So we were all together, and now I was going to be in a position where I was going to be able to actually support them myself and give them the things that, you know, had I not got sober, I wouldn't have been able to give them. And I know that's only material stuff, but, you know, the foundation had been there, and the emotional stability that I was able to give them by being sober. And you know, I thank God every day for it.
So did you do the Hazelton course?
Yes, I did the Hazelton course in the centre that was just opening that year. So we were the first trainees with senior counsellors there. And we were working with people who are addicted. It was a cross community, you know, cross border, multi-religion center, and Father Neil Carlin runs it. It's in Donegal, on the border between Derry and Donegal, as I say, run by Father Neil Carlin. And again, you know, that was that's where I started off my new career, and that's where I am today. And you know, and every day I feel more and more blessed that I am on this journey, because I'm walking with people that I know their pain, I know what they're going through, and I know I can give them hope.
Now, a lot of people who are listening to this would say it is an amazing story of hope. I mean, you said you were in hell, you're now working with people, you're a counsellor, you've turned your life completely around. What would you say to some people who are listening who maybe are praying that their husband, wife, son or daughter gets recovery, or an addict who are listening and they feel, well, God isn't giving that gift to me?
You know, that gift is there for everybody that really, really looks for it. You know, God wants everybody to get well, and you know, and pass on the good news to those that come behind. That's why AA works. That's how AA works. And you know, if they do nothing else, you know, but find out where the nearest AA meeting is, that'll be their first step. And if they go in to that AA meeting with an open mind and an open heart and believe that their lives can be changed, then they can. You know, they really, really can. There's no ifs, ands or buts about it. You know, it's there. It is there for everybody. And for the family members of people who are in addiction and, you know, don't know where to go or don't know what to do for themselves, then the sister the sister organisation for that is Al-Anon. And it is also based on the same 12 steps, the same 12 traditions, the same spirituality. It's applied in a slightly different way, and it's for the families of people who are addicted, that they can get love and support and that spirituality back into their lives that they may have lost, you know, watching people that they love destroying themselves as they see it. When I was younger, I didn't believe in hell, but I now do, because I've been there. But I've also enjoyed that resurrection, if you like. I'm not in hell anymore, and I don't fear death anymore either, because, you know, a God that can get me from where I was to where I am, you know, well, then when I pass on from here, there must be something much, much better. And you know, I did see it very clearly once I did get into recovery, that the struggle between addiction and getting sober, it is very like the struggle between good and evil. And, you know, and not to get too technical about it, but, you know, Carl Jung, in one of his letters to you, or from one of the AA founders.
This is Carl Jung, the psychologist.
Yeah. He did lots of work with alcoholics before AA, and couldn't make a peg of them, really. And he was a spiritual or religious man, and did try very hard, and he, the way he penned it was, you know, spiritus contra spiritum, which is the spirit working against the spirit, you know, the spirit of God working against the spirit in the body. And that to me sums it up, you know, very much so. And I could see that very clearly once the spirit left me, the evil spirit, as I see it.
And so, do you believe that you remain sober because of the spirituality in God in your life?
Oh, absolutely. Because one of the things that I live with is gratitude. And, you know, if I can be grateful for my sobriety, which I do, and you know, life is difficult for everybody. I mean, this sobriety doesn't guarantee a pain-free passage. And some days, all the gratitude is, thank God that day's over. But if that day is over and I haven't had to resort to lifting a drink, you know, for that 24 hours, then it's a good day.